Hello, and welcome to ngbuild-pod, where we share with you our knowledge of Angular, all the mistakes we've made, and some of the things we've gotten right. I'm Chris Kamak, and with me as always is the phenomenal John Graham. We are both full-stack Angular developers that love to share and be part of the developer community. We both work here at Miles Technologies in Lumberton, New Jersey on the engine team, and we have spent the last several years building out our Angular template for the Miles software division. So John, tell us what you've been up to in the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, so it's been a little bit of a break, and I think some of that is due to the fact that I finally took a vacation and took a little bit of a longer one, went to the shore, the local beach town, and it was great. Had good weather, were able to distance ourselves from people, didn't go on the boardwalk or anything, just ordered food out. And had a really good time not in my neighborhood.
That sounds really nice.
Yes, it was great. So feel very relaxed, actually, you know, and then we had Labor Day right after I got back. So I have quite a bit of time off of work and trying to actually get back in the swing of things. This morning, actually, was probably one of the first mornings I felt like I was back at it, you know, and able to focus again. So that was good. It was really great. I had a great time. From a technology standpoint, just been focusing on the cloud stuff and Terraform, which has been a lot of fun as well. Some of the cloud automation. Excited to take a break from that and get back to some coding. Terraform is kind of coding, I guess, but less, you know, configuration and more, you know, real world stuff. So looking forward to that.
Logic based programming is what you're thinking.
Yeah.
You're looking for.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really fun to try to figure out how to do like an if statement and a for loop in Terraform. They're interesting, like not being a procedurally based coding language. So, but yeah, that's been me. How about you? What have you been doing?
Just a lot of the same stuff I've been up to as far as like, you know, guitar.
The bass guitar
and, you know, video gaming now and again. Trying to find places to walk where there aren't too many people so I can actually have some exercise. You know, those types of things. I did take a trip recently, though, to a fossil pit out in Danville, PA, which was pretty fun to see. It wasn't very... We didn't get anything out of it. Like, we didn't find anything. But it was fun to be out there and have something like that to do. And then we took a drive up to State College to see Aaron's alma mater, which is pretty cool. You know, she spent a lot of time up there, and I certainly enjoyed seeing her old haunts, if you will, which was weird because they're in session at Penn State right now, but there are no students there. Like, maybe she said it's probably around 25 to 50% capacity, the amount of people that are actually there. So it's kind of weird.
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably like a ghost town, you know, compared to what you're used to seeing in September.
Yeah. I mean, it is what it is these days.
Yeah. Well, there's some houses for sale in my neighborhood, Chris, and there's plenty of place to walk without seeing people in the burbs. If you want to get out here,
yeah.
You won't have trouble finding that.
Well, you know, I really, really love my place here in Philly. I love the city life, but it is lost all of its good things about it with the corona. You know, going to see fantastic music shows around the corner is a thing that I used to do. Not something
yeah.
I currently do.
Yeah, I used to love living vicariously through you on the, you know, when you would give me the updates in the office
yeah.
on the cool things you were doing.
Yep, so. No, it's pretty boring now, so there you go. But that's why we're doing this podcast, because this gives us something to focus on, something to talk about, and a way to share back with everyone. I'm going to talk a little bit about what our topic's going to be about for today, and then we're going to get to the quick tips. But before that, this is a pretty exciting one for us. We're going to be talking about something that we feel is probably one of our largest accomplishments for our template and framework, and that is dynamic forms is what we call it. And it's really a concept and a module that provides some pretty interesting stuff. It basically makes it so that we can define what an object looks like and is in our database. And from that, Angular can automatically create forms with all the trimmings based on those objects. So it's a really cool setup that we have. It's very tied right now to our specific tech stack, and we'll get into all the things about that. I do want to say, though, that this is going to have to be a multi-parter. This is just, it's just too much to cover in any one session. In fact, we're not even sure if this is a two-parter, a three-parter, or a four-parter, or what, because it's just, it's so big, we just can't tell for sure. But we're pretty excited about it, wouldn't you say, John?
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely the killer feature of our template. You know, we've been talking about our template in a lot of previous episodes, discussing things like authentication and stuff, which is nice to be able to build into a reusable form. But this is something that, you know, isn't really a pattern or paradigm that we've seen in other places. We've seen, like, you know, the building blocks of it are there, like dynamic forms and things like that aren't an idea that we created. It's actually on the Angular website now, but the way that we kind of put it all together, I think, is unique, and I'm excited to share. And it's one of the best features of the template, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a huge part of what we do, and I'm just going to throw it out there. If you have maybe not too much interest in some of these specialization pieces that we've made, the building blocks we've used to get to this point, and some of the concepts that we've built into this are going to be really usable in all kinds of ways within an Angular application. So if the dynamic forms is something that you're interested in, great, stick around. If it's if dynamic forms, it sounds like, meh, I don't know if I'm really into that. Hey, the stuff we're going to cover in here will be usable in all kinds of ways. So stick around anyhow. So we have some quick tips we want to go over first before we jump into it. John, what's your quick tip of the day?
Yeah, so like I said in my intro, I've just started kind of feeling like I'm getting back into it. So I don't really have any great tech quick tips today. But the one thing that I will share is just kind of from my experience over the past few weeks. And that's, you know, if you can, I mean, if you're in a position to do this and you have the ability, I think right now trying to find an opportunity to, you know, safely and effectively go on vacation is something that I recommend you try to do because, you know, now I think what, you know, from a few of the articles I've read and stuff, it's been hard for people to disconnect from their work life. It's been hard for them to get away. And if you don't have clear boundaries and things, it can kind of bleed over. And I'd imagine that burnout, you know, being 6 months into this, you know, sort of pandemic is going to start becoming a big issue. And the holidays, it's not necessarily going to be easy to get together with people like it was before. So I would definitely recommend that you try to figure out a way to do it if you can, to think about, you know, sort of your burnout and your mental health and trying to think of ways to disconnect as much as you can so that you're refreshed and happy when you come back, which is what I am, you know, after my break. So that's my quick tip. How about you?
I've really been working quite a bit on the cloud initiative that we had been doing. We're working with Azure in that case. And during that, we stumbled across something based on Azure's recommendations, actually, called SendGrid. And I had not worked with SendGrid before. I had never heard of it. So I just wanted to put a shout out there to what I think is a pretty good service offering from SendGrid and make sure that people are aware of it. Let's give a quick rundown of what it is. So if you are like me and you have a developer environment at your home office that maybe doesn't have access to its own email server, you know, you don't have a routing server or an SMTP server of your own set up, but you are working on applications that need the capability to send email. So you could obviously set that up. It's not like there aren't, you know, tons of articles out there on how to do it. But this SendGrid provides a way not only for, you know, your local environment to have its own sort of SMTP setup, but also it provides a way for, you know, long-term use of production apps to have their own SMTP versions. And, you know, what it really is it's a mail router, if you will, and it's going to send to a gateway, and the gateway is remote with SendGrid, and you just set up an account with them. And then it connects all the dots and allows you to have your own SMTP router that you're using that's off-site. Very easy to work with, free up to a certain amount of sends per month, and an easy plan to pay for if you have something that actually has some throughput. So I just wanted to make sure and put that out there. I thought that it was a really good find.
Yeah, really easy to get from no email to email quickly with that, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I liked about it. It was super simple and easy to work with and escalates and scales pretty well.
Yeah.
So right, back awesome. Into the topic here, let's just jump into it because I know both of us are itching to get in. John, do you want to like lay out a little bit more information, sort of building on what I've already said about dynamic forms?
Yeah, so I think like let's start with a little bit of a more refresher or explanation as to the technologies involved with our template and our tech stack, because I think you know, it's important to kind of have that context as we go through and talk. So when we talk about the database, you know what we're talking about. And I'm not saying that you need to have these particular technological pieces to, you know, get your own version of dynamic forms. It's just this is the context in which we're talking in. So let me talk about the tech stack a little bit, right? So you have your front end, you have your back end, and you have your database. So in our world, the database is Microsoft SQL Server. So we use a relational database, Microsoft SQL Server. Our back end is all built in .NET, but it's essentially just a web API, a service, and a model. So pretty straightforward kind of end-tier architecture there. And then obviously for the front end, because we wouldn't be doing this podcast if we didn't, we have Angular as our front end stack. So one of the important things that's kind of good to know here is that we do have some logical pieces in our model area that help kind of build up the structure for our dynamic forms. Because like you had mentioned, Chris, we built this sort of dream where you can add something to the database and then it auto-updates the form right on the front end. So there's some integration pieces there that we're going to get into, but I think that's kind of the main technology pieces involved. And I'll pass it over to you in a minute, but I do want to talk a little bit about like how we even got to creating dynamic forms, right? Because this is like I said, the dynamic form concept existed. It wasn't certainly on the Angular's main website when we started. It was more grassroots, I'll say. But, you know, what's the point of going through all this, like, work to get these dynamic forms there? And, you know, I think that it started with how a lot of ideas start on our team, which is we're all meeting and we're talking. And we kind of do this once a year where we have, you know, sort of one big meeting to rethink, I'll say, how we do things. And, you know, whenever you get all of us together in a room with some pizza in our bellies, we tend to come up with some crazy and interesting ideas. And, you know, I think that, you know, back in the day when we were talking about this, it was one of those things where it was just like, hey, you know, what if we generated the forms instead of people actually having to write them? Right. I do my the thing I like to say when we're in a meeting, when I have an idea like that, is I'm going to speak words. These words have no technological basis to them, but it would be nice if these words were a reality. So, you know, we
taking that sort of thing to a reality is a little bit of a summary of what our team does.
Yeah, exactly. Words to reality. So yeah, it just started as a crazy idea. And, you know, what we really wanted to get out of it was, you know, saving time, like ultimately, right? So like reducing the amount of time it takes for our developers to build applications without, you know, creating such a crazy abstraction that people don't understand what it's doing, right? Or how to customize it or things like that. So it started as that crazy abstraction that people didn't understand or couldn't modify. And I think over time, we landed on a structure today that is both very friendly from an automation standpoint when you have standard scenarios and you don't really need to apply a lot of custom logic, but also offers you the ability to extend the logic and customize it in ways that, you know, if you have just a simple one-off scenario, you don't have to totally drop the tool completely. So, you know, it's kind of evolved from this initial idea to an initial implementation to now what we feel is like a pretty robust, customizable resource. And again, the ultimate goal and what I think it does help accomplish is it helps like greatly reduce the development speed for these simple CRUD-based applications. So, you know, that's kind of like how we got to where we're at right now. Anything you want to add to that, Chris?
Oh, I just want to speak some truth and say that I'm pretty sure the original statement was, I don't want to write forms. Writing forms just isn't a thing we should do anymore. It's at the time, I want to say it was 2017. Why are we still writing forms? You know, and hey, it's a good point. I mean, once you've written what your 50th form in Angular, you know, the shine's wearing off a little bit. It's kind of the same thing over and over again. I will say another thing though is consistency and the benefits of having something make its way through the system in a consistent manner. I'll give you an example of what I mean here. Right now, the way that our setup is done, it isn't just saying, hey, there's a table named customer. It's also saying that it has a property with a customer name. And that customer name is a string and that it isn't nullable. Based on just that information, we're able to translate that into a form that knows that there's a property called customer name. So it has a label, customer name, and it has an input box that is required. Now, how does it know it's required? Well, it's not nullable in the database, so must be required. So it's making some assumptions based on the way that you set up the options in your database. But the thing that's interesting about this is it's easy to get things right. Well, I'm not going to say easy. It's conceivable that as a developer, you're going to get things right on the first pass. I mean, you're given the layout of the table, you're given the layout of the form, you're given a mock-up of what it should look like. And, you know, if you're doing your job and they're giving you enough time to do it and you're doing it diligently, chances are you're going to come up with the right answer and you're going to remember that name should have been required and you're going to remember that it should have a red asterisk next to the label. And you're going to remember that if someone were to leave that blank, that it probably should highlight in red. I'm just talking about standard UI UX stuff now. And that's great. But let's say down the road, they say, I want customer name to be required, and it wasn't originally. Well, it's very possible that someone might go in and make the change to the database. It's also very possible they might go and make a change to the form, but are they going to remember to update the UI or UX? In those kinds of scenarios, we've found that the prod sys kind of changes, the one-off changes that they're being asked to do rather quickly, usually, it's hard to have consistency. It's hard to know how to build out the form and make the changes in all the spots that need the changes. But in our scenario, assuming it was all automated, you just change one field to nullable or not nullable, and that's it. Everything changes down the line. The form builds out the right way. It displays the right way. It knows whether it's required or not. In other words, this is better than just making your job easier on the initial side. It's consistency and making sure that things are going to be handled the same way from a user experience standpoint every time. And that's kind of worth something just in and of itself, don't you think?
Yeah, for sure. And if you couldn't tell, we're really trying to take this first part to help you understand the sorts of problems and goals that you can set for yourself when creating this, because it helps kind of steer you know, how you implement it in your technology stack. So I agree with you. And I think even like the, you know, to me, the simpler understanding for value to me as a developer, right, is that, you know, in that customer scenario, if you know, I now get a, you know, a sprint feedback ticket that says, you know, we actually need customer number. We forgot to add that field in the requirements, right? So I already have the customer table. I already have the customer logic. I already have the customer form. And now you just want to add one field, right? So in this full stack world where I'm doing everything, I got to go to the database. I got to add the table column there. I got to go to the model. I got to update that. I got to go, you know, hopefully you're using some sort of CRUD or repository logic. It's simple to not make any changes to the save. Then I got to go to the form. I got to add it there. Like you're going to like all these different places. And it's really, you know, this is what I always say is like the only things I want to automate for our developers are the things that don't require a lot of thought, right? So once I've determined that I need a customer number and I have an existing environment in which to put it in, so I've already put the thought into that as well, the work to actually get it there really, you know, it doesn't require a heck of a lot of thought. If you have experience, it doesn't even require almost any thought. You can almost do it with your eyes closed, you know, just navigating through. So it's really just a bunch of like menial steps that you're doing that add up, you know, over the lifetime of a project, you know, between, you know, feedback one and feedback two and feedback three. And like you said, now, you know, when you have a required field, there's some more elements to add that have nothing to do with the field. With the required asterisks and things like that. So it's just a lot of really frustrating, I'll say, changes that don't add a lot of value to somebody that's really looking to challenge themselves and think through things at a more deeper level. I think you start to see what you can think about when you're not thinking about that stuff, right? Because it's not just about getting the project done faster. It's about, well, now that I've released my cognitive load from these simple form changes, let me apply it to something else, you know, and try to make it better or enhance a feature or prevent, you know, feedback or prevent a major problem later on with performance. So, you know, it's not even just when I say it'll take less time, I don't mean shorter timelines, although that can be the case. I mean, really, it will, you know, prevent mistakes typically and things like that. So why don't we get into, you know, kind of a very specific scenario of how, you know, you kind of alluded to it a little bit, of how, like, where the we really see the value here, right? Because I'll be honest, you know, for like we built a site for our podcast, right? That's never going to use dynamic forms. no reason to. It's a simple site. You know, if you're working, there's a lot of use cases where dynamic forms doesn't work. So what we kind of want to do, I think, is just maybe lay out, you know, a front to back sort of scenario where we think it's really strong and it's a clear benefit to, you know, your application.
Right, and we also want to be able to build on top of this scenario. We want to paint a picture of an incremental set of things that could be done to get you from point A to the done section where everything is the way that we've said and it's rosy and all the music is playing. But at this point, let's just lay out a quick scenario that we're going to use as a framework to discuss this. So let's start off with we are imagining that we're going to be building an ERP system. I realize that acronym may not make sense to everyone. A enterprise resource. But I never remember what it means. Here's what it means,
I'm
guys.
I'm pretty sure it's planning, the last one.
Yeah,
is planning.
Yeah. Here's what it means, guys. Here's what ERP means. It means that it's a standard business application where you are going to handle a lot of CRUD operations, and you're going to manage a bunch of objects. Think of a
CRUD
system.
CRUD
is create, read, update, delete. But just to be clear, let's talk about a system where you are going to have lots of different types of objects. Let's say that there are customers. And there's a whole section about managing customers. There's a list of them. There's a place where you can add new ones. There's a place where you can edit their values. There's a section for vendors, which are different than customers from an object standpoint. There's a section for orders, adding orders. There's probably a section for contacts of customers and contacts of vendors. And you can see how this spirals. You know, when we talk about an ERP system, this is the type of thing we're talking about, something that's got an object for everything in your business that you interact with and some way to manage and update that information. So is that a good enough explanation of the ERP, at least what it is?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, cool. So then let's zero in on one particular object right now. We're going to talk about customer. And what we're going to do is we're going to say that customer has a bunch of fields on it. You know, we'll say that it has name. We'll say that it has like maybe a URL or website address. It has an address, a set of address fields that go with it. And you use your imagination. It could have all kinds of different inputs for what defines a customer. You know, but that's a good place to start.
Yeah, but I think with this, let's just start with like, you know, string-based, you know, values, right? Yeah. Let's not worry about, you know, a phone number, which could be string-based if you want it to be. But, you know, things like that that are a little bit borderline. Let's just think of things like name, address, you know, URL, things that are obviously going to be string-based. And we'll expand on this further, but, you know, let's just keep our frame of mind in that for the time being.
I think that's a good call. Now, we're also going to say in our scenario that we're painting here, that we have fully embraced the benefits of using reactive forms within Angular. Now, if you're not using reactive forms now, or you don't have a lot of experience with it, we're going to give you a quick primer on what that is. But definitely for your own uses, I'd highly recommend that you work with reactive forms within Angular.
Yeah, and the one thing that I guess we should call out is when we say dynamic forms, that is a concept, not a like Angular module, right? So like when you're using reactive forms in Angular, you're actually importing the reactive forms module or the forms module when you're doing template-driven forms. When we say dynamic forms, this is a concept, a paradigm. It doesn't actually exist as a entity in Angular. You're not going to be pulling it in and accessing it. You're going to be building your own interface for it, but it still is leveraging these forms objects under the hood. So you're not, you know, you're not importing something different.
Right. Agreed. And so for the reactive forms, just to give this really quick primer on what it is, it's the concept of a form being itself an object within Angular, and that the form is something that exists in your TS, your code behind, if you will. And you can check that thing. You can say, is my form valid? You can say, get me the control for customer name out of this form. And it's really this really cool concept. If you think about it this way, it maps to what an object is. A form is probably representing a specific object. So perhaps the form itself is a group of controls, and that form is called customer. And then within those controls, you've got customer name, URL, address one, address two. Those are individual form controls within the form group. And that's kind of the concept with reactive forms, is that you have on the backside a representation of what is the form itself, what is its data, and whether it's got certain validations and is it valid right now. However, on the front side, when I say the front side, I'm talking specifically on the HTML or template side. What control represents that form, what control represents the customer name, those are things that you have to sort of link together. So the form object is this object on the back code side, and then it links to the template via form control name.
Yeah, and if you're definitely going to, I think, need to have a little bit of an understanding of reactive forms to follow along. You know, that is, I think, the one kind of prerequisite to this. We're going to do our best to explain things as simply as we can, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we're not going to explain every single thing about building out a reactive form because, you know, that's the intro. That's going to kind of get you at least to a base level understanding of it. So check it out. There's plenty of guides and videos and stuff. There's, you know, millions of them out there that will explain reactive forms to you. But let's talk a little bit more about, I think, the view side of things to paint a picture for what it is that we have with this form, right? So when we get the form on the front end, we have the form controls, which are part of the form groups of the reactive form you were just talking about. That's going to be things like customer name, address one, address two, city, state, URL, all of those things. But there's also other view pieces that are a part of that, right? So you're going to have a label, typically. You're going to have, you know, like you said, required fields. So that's going to require validation. You're going to have validation errors, which are going to be labels as well. You're going to have things like buttons to do your saves and stuff like that. And they're all going to be formatted in, you know, almost identical ways, I'd imagine, in most cases, right? So you have your label, drop a line, your form control, drop a line, your form validation messages, and then at the very bottom, you have your buttons, right? So, I mean, I don't think this is anything groundbreaking here. It's a typical form you'd see. But when you think about writing that form, you know, you do it for the customer, you build out the whole form. Then what do you do when you have another entity that's very similar, right? So probably you just copy the customer form, you throw that on another one, and you're swapping out things that are different, right? So the properties are different, the names are different, things like that. And you're just kind of continuing this, right? And this is kind of the cycle we got into when we first started converting our template to Angular. If I remember correctly, way back in the day, we did this, right? So like we started building these forms. We built the user form. We built the customer form. We built the address form. We built the notes form. We built the contacts form. And like you get to a point where you're like, holy cow, like these all are exactly the same, right? For the most part, with some differences in variables and names and things like that. And, you know, and us, you know, the way we think is, we ask ourselves the question is, what are we going to do if we ever have to change anything here, right? Like, what's going to happen? Like, say we want to change how we use reactive forms or how we do validation, or, you know, we want to swap out some UI element. You're going to have to go in and change this in like 50 places, you know what I mean? And it's like an insurmountable amount of like technical pressure you're putting on yourselves to get it right the first time. So we kind of saw this at the beginning, and we said to ourselves, you know, well, let's think of a better way to handle this. And this is before it even got into dynamic forms, right? We're just talking about making forms easier to manage, right? And not having to repeat ourselves a lot.
Yeah, I mean, think about it just even, you know, even if we're not just talking about individual forms, if we're just talking about the controls themselves, like so... Is customer name as an input field of text all that different than, say, address one, if it's also just text? Probably not, right? Like it's just a text-based input control. HTML5 input type equals text. That's what it is. Is the label all that different? Well, what it says is different. The words are different, but nothing else is different here. So really the concept is the same over and over again, not just within, you know, customer form and vendor form are similar. The individual controls themselves are repeating the same elements over and over again. So yeah, I mean, this is a really good opportunity for us to do something. And I'm pretty sure it started off with the concept of how many objects are in our database, how many of those have string inputs, and how many times do I have to go and change the validation message if someone says that, well, you know, I really wish it didn't say name is required. I wish it said this form requires name. So how many places would I have to go change that text around? I mean, that's a lot if you think about it.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that, you know, we have the advantage of having been building ERP systems for as long as we have is we've made this mistake before, right? When we built things in our old .NET web forms days, we built custom controls because we were repeating similar logic over and over again. We've even leveraged third party tools like Telerik because, you know, when you want a you know, a string field, you also want to put some more logic behind it, right? Like you want to have it have a max length. You want to have it have regex validation at times, right? Like you want these extra pieces that aren't always apparent at the beginning of a process, but get added in later. So that's when you build these controls so that you can update them and help other people, you know, sharing these updates with other people when they need them. And we've realized, hey, you know, if we're really just duplicating this logic over and over and over again, we're going to have a hard time maintaining it. So, you know, we kind of have the experience to build on there as well, just throwing it out there. We weren't clairvoyant to this problem. It's been a problem that we've had to deal with kind of in the past. So I think the thing that we're getting at here or alluding to is we initially tried to solve it with how you solve most, what I'll say, what I would imagine is most reusable problems in Angular, right? So when you have a problem in Angular where you're building a control or a interface or a UI element that you're using in multiple places, you do...
You make a component!
You make a component. And then you use the component, right? That's the key to the... That's the beauty of the Angular world. So 100,000 John points to Chris. They're worth nothing. You can redeem them nowhere. So the first step is let's make a component, right? Let's make a component that represents this form control. And this is where, when you said a few minutes ago that you embrace the power of reactive forms, you know, you don't get, like, I don't know that you see a ton of reactive form power when you're writing a reactive form on a page, right? It's nice. You can do some neat things like with form arrays and stuff. But when, you know, you abstract it to a component is where you really start to see, oh, wow, having this form control object is going to make my life a lot easier.
Yeah, absolutely. So you want to go ahead and lay out what we're going to do for this component? Like, what's the idea? What are we trying to accomplish? What are the parts that we're identifying we need to handle?
Yeah, for sure. I'll talk layout, and then maybe you can chime in with kind of implementation
okay.
a little bit.
Sounds right? good.
Yeah, so let's pretend we have a new component that we call app input, right? Very aptly named app input. And the goal for this, and like we said at the beginning, we're just talking about string-based values here. So at the end of the day, they're all going to be inputs, right? They could be text boxes, they could be a bunch of different types of inputs, but you know, really we just want to have an input control that we can tweak pieces of it, but it's still, at the end of the day, going to be that kind of control. So let's review the use case and talk about the things involved. So the first thing we need is we need it to be able to present a label, right? So it needs to be able to say, this is the customer name input. But that label is going to be dynamic, right? It's going to say customer name 1 point. It's going to say address 1 at another point. It's going to say URL at another point. The next thing is it needs an input, somewhere to actually type text in. And since we're going to be using this in a reactive form, it's going to need things like a form control name, which again is going to be unique and dynamic. It may need things like validators, which are going to be, again, dynamic and unique. And that's really it, I think, right? So like it's going to have its label, it's going to have its input, and then it's going to have its validation messages below it. Now we may want to add that little thing like the asterisk, which is more of a static HTML thing that just gets dynamically toggled. But, you know, essentially that's kind of the meat of it, right? It's a real simple component, a couple lines of code.
Yep. It really just needs to know what's my name, like from a label standpoint. What does my form control look like? Like, in other words, give me the form control that you want me to be part of, right? Or
the group, the form group.
The form group. It needs to know what part or what form group it's part of. And it needs to know whether or not it's required. We're not going to handle the max length side of things yet, but we'll get there. So it's just those three things. What is my label supposed to say? What is my form group? Am I required or not? And just by knowing those things, we can format this thing and take care of it. And it'll work in all the three cases that we're talking about, which is name, address 1, and URL. I think that this is a good starting point. As far as the layout's concerned, I think that we've already discussed it'll be like a label with drop a line, then there's the input. And then underneath of the input will be red validation text. If you've touched this form and tried to, you know, validate it, but it says it's required and you don't have anything in there, then you know, it'll pop that message and say, hey, this is a required field, you need to do this, you know, standard form stuff. So I think that we've got a pretty good thing laid out. There's a couple of things that we're going to need to do that are maybe not all maybe not obvious right at first. And I'll go with the first one. If you're going to do this with a form control and a form group, which of course we're saying we want to use reactive forms, so that's what we want to do, then we do need to pass it a form group because it needs to be able to access that control. And the way that happens with reactive forms is you put a attribute onto your input box, and that attribute is form control name, and it expects the name or the string that you give it to marry up to the name of a form control within the form group it's part of. Now, if we're componentizing this input box, then technically it's not inside of a form right now. It's on its own. It's there is no form concept around it. So if you just put a label in an input box on a component template and then said, hey, this input box has form control name, you're going to get some compiler errors. It's going to say, wait, you can't have form control name. You don't even have a form group. And it's because we're pulling this piece out. But it's very nice to know that as far as reactive forms are concerned, you can pass in a fragment of a form group and put that form group on your control, like wrap it around the input, assign the form group to that wrapper, and then say my form control name is customer name as an example. And you may say to yourself, well, wait a minute, if I'm abstracting this piece, if I'm saying there's one of these components for every string input, well, that means the form group is going to be represented every time there's a control. And you'll be right about it from a what's going to happen in the element template side of things. But as far as reactive forms are concerned, they don't care how many times you represent that form group in on the page. So the fact that we're wrapping it on every element is actually not a problem. As long as the form control name you're accessing exists at the level of that form group, it doesn't care that it was referenced multiple times. And I may or may not be stating that clearly. So John, you want to clean up the language for me?
Sure. I get where people might get a little confused. So let me just take a step back and talk about what the form looks like on the component before and after this modification. So before this modification, you have HTML, you have a form tag, and that form tag has a property bound, a bound property called form group, right? And you call it customer form, whatever you want to call it. Nested inside of that, you have these repeatable elements we've been talking about, right? The label, the form control on the input, the validation, things like that. You just repeat that all nested inside of the actual form tag itself. So what you do when you abstract it this way is instead of having all of the chunks repeated inside of that form, you're going to now just have a single component, which is our app input component. And you're going to repeat that multiple times. And I think the thing where you're saying where the form group can kind of be created referenced multiple times is on each of those components, you're going to also pass that form group in so that the component knows which group to attach to, because it doesn't have that context that it normally does where it's nested directly inside of the form. Instead, it's nested inside of a component, which is inside of the form, right? So you're having to pass that structure down one more level. So you need to define it at each control.
Much better put than what I said, but yes, that is what I was trying to say.
It's okay. Some of this stuff can get lost along the way. And what I'll just say real quick is this is a great optimization, and you can stop right here, right? We haven't talked about dynamic anything, right? Nothing about this is dynamic other than the properties inside of the form control component that you've created, right? Which, you know, all properties are pretty much dynamic inside of a component, right? So so the form, you can start building forms like this and using shareable input controls and get a lot of value out of that, right? You can add validation, you can add logic, you can add customizable things, and it'll be consistent across your whole application. So, you know, I just want to point out that you could start here and use this right here, and I think you get a lot of value just with this part, and we haven't even gotten into, you know, it built literally building the form for you. This is just kind of the building block to it. So don't, you know, feel the need to have to, you know, swing for the fences with this concept. You can definitely start by hitting a single or double, to use a bunch of baseball references that hopefully people understand. But you can start small and get a lot of value out of just componentizing these things a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. And I just want to also state that we were talking about the form tag and the fact that it's referencing a form group. Well, that reference is to the object we were talking about in the code on the TS side. It's a form group that Angular has provided as a class for us. It's an object. And so it's literally direct. It's saying, this is the object that is on my form. And then when you use form control name and say the form control name equals customer name, it says, am I inside of some kind of form group? And if I am, can I access that form control? So that's where those connecting pieces are coming from. So you do have to define what is the form control representation from an object standpoint, not a template standpoint. You have to define that outside of our component. The component is not defining form controls and form objects for you. It's simply providing a way to display them and link them together and connect the dots. But it's not itself creating a new form group or a new form control. We do eventually get to that level, but that's not where we are right now, not in our current example.
Yeah, you can imagine like where the address might want to be its own form group down the road, right? You don't want that necessarily sitting on the same form group as the customer form. But yeah, we'll get to that. So I think maybe it's a good point right here to kind of recap the sort of journey we've taken and preview some of the things we're going to talk about in the next parts of the series. And we'll let people kind of digest this concept a little bit of just kind of abstracting the form a little bit and understanding, you know, the reusability of form controls and custom form controls is really what we're talking about here. So let me take a stab at just kind of recapping our journey. So we started with explaining the technologies that are involved here, and that's for reference later on. So remember, it's a SQL database, a .NET API, and Angular front end. We're leveraging all of the reactive forms features, so it's kind of important to understand basics of reactive forms. And what we've done is we've taken an application that we know is going to have a lot of forms, you know, a lot of CRUD operations, a lot of saving and updating and all that stuff. And we've decided now that we want to take this display of what a form control is, right? Because in the Angular world, a form control is only attached to an input, right? Or, you know, some type of input. But for us, a form control is actually the grouping of the label, the input, and the validation, right? So it's got a little bit more to it. So we wanted to create a reusable sort of structure for that. So we've taken the existing customer form and we've decided, instead of repeating ourselves, label input validation, label input validation, label input validation, we're going to create a app input that's going to have all of those in it. And the only thing we're repeating in the form is app input, app input, app input, app input as a component inside of that form. And so that will let us kind of centralize and reuse a lot of the logic, and we're just kind of swapping out things at the property level as we get going. So that's kind of, I think, the recap of where we're at. Did I miss anything, Chris?
No. I think it's a very good start. I think it is important that we talk about some of the enhancements that you would make, because, I mean, we've laid out a very straightforward scenario to get us started. We didn't want to push too hard or go too fast, but you know, there are definitely some things that we would want to do as upgrades or changes to this, and you know, these are the types of things that come up as you start building out more and more forms in our sample application. If you think about it that way, the scenarios will come up where there are different things that you want to do different ways.
Yeah, so let's whet the appetite of the viewers a little bit, and let's get them excited about what's coming next. So I know one thing we're going to be talking about in the next series is, or the next part of the series is, okay, we've kept it basic to inputs. and I have an app input control, you know, what do I do when I have different types of controls, right? Am I going to have to create an app select control? Am I going to have to create an app numeric input control because I only want numbers? You know, am I going to have to do all of that granularity, or is there some better way to do that? So we're going to talk about, I think, those advanced features or some changes in the next part. I think we're also going to get maybe into the really cool parts, which is, you know, how do I put a table or a column in my database, and then all of a sudden I have a form available to me? Like, that sounds like magic. What are the actual pieces and the path to create that that desirable outcome? So we're going to be talking about that in future parts as well. And then I think at the end of the day, we'll talk about maybe some of the things that we don't like about dynamic forms, because it does create some complications and some difficulties in certain cases, and how we've rectified that with kind of an enhanced version of what we just described today. So we do have an enhanced version of, like, reusable inputs instead of, like, you know, a whole form. So we have a lot of, I think, great answers and rabbit holes to go down or avoid in these future parts. We'll do our best to kind of consolidate it and give it to everybody in the best way possible. But that's what's coming up in the next few parts of this series.
Yep, absolutely. We're also going to talk about some of the enhancements or features that you could add to this. Again, we've talked about a very simple text-based input right now, a string input. But, you know, if we wanted to create forms and we want those forms to look very professional, it's pretty much most of the time you're going to end up with a situation where you have a maximum length on these. Say customer name is limited to 50 characters, as an example, in your database. It sure would be nice if we had some sort of UI or UX element just below the input box that said you currently have 20 out of 50 characters that you've used in this field. And, you know, that probably should only show when it's focused, you know, standard stuff that you're used to seeing if you're out there signing up for, you know, a service with a very professional, very well done UI UX element. But there's no reason we can't build that on our own. If we do, building it into the app input allows you the ability to have it everywhere. It just updates the entire application at one time and provides a new feature set, if you will. We're also going to talk about having conditionals in there. You know, right now we've got an app input that is always an input type text. But if the max length were 500 characters, would you want to put that all in one line, or is that better to have a text area? And how would we convert the app input to be conditional in that way? So we're going to talk about a lot of things like that as well. But yeah, there's a lot to go over here. The more I think about it, the more I'm thinking it's probably not just a two-parter. But we're gonna do our best to ramp it up and go a little faster on our next one to really get more information out there in front of you guys. It's a big concept, and we wanted to make sure and take lots of time to lay the foundation today.
The mega series that is Forms, but yeah, a lot less setup in the next series. We'll just jump right into some of the cool things that you can do to help with some of these problems. So yeah, that's awesome. Any final thoughts?
You know, I guess the one that I'll put out there is we are making updates to our Dynamic Forms module every month, and it's been around for years at this point, and we still are finding things that we can do to enhance it, update it, controls that can be added to it, a better understanding of how to understand, or a better way of comprehending what's in the database and what kind of control that should be as an assumption on the front end. It was only a couple of months ago that we updated our dynamic forms to recognize when it probably should be a what you see is what you get editor, you know, where you can actually use bullets and things like that, and HTML tags within the string representation. So this is not a journey that you just take and one day you're done. For us, it's been a multi-year situation where we've learned more and more every time.
Yeah, and I'll just throw out that, like, I'm really excited. Like, this is such a cool feature. I remember back in when I first introduced this to the company, and the demo that I thought was so cool, which I still think is ridiculously cool, is I just went and I added a text box, and it just appeared, and then I moved it up and down in the form without actually changing any HTML at all. Did not touch HTML. And that just blew my mind that I could add a component to the screen and then control where it is located on the screen. And it looks exactly the way I would build it. And I did not touch an HTML file throughout the whole process. I didn't have to write any HTML at all, period. Which is crazy. And it blew my mind. And I think we'll do a video, I think, and attach it to one of these. Because I think it's a very visually awesome thing to see, these dynamic forms in action. And we'll figure out some sort of demo we can share with everybody who's listening so that you can kind of get that same feeling hopefully that I got, which is like, whoa, this is like wild when it actually is operating on all cylinders.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm excited for it. Cool. All right, we'll tune in next time. We'll continue with this this dynamic form saga. But thanks everybody for listening to the first part. Definitely, if you have any questions or comments about the layout we've done so far, you can reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at John Graham Dev. Chris is at Pilgrim Secret. We've had some great interactions with some of our listeners since our last podcast, the last RxJS one. I'm not going to name them because they didn't give me permission to share their Twitter handles. But definitely, if you have any questions, let us know. We'd love to talk to you. And if you want a shout out, let us know. We can shout your Twitter handle out on the next episode. So yeah, that's a great way to follow us and talk to us. And as always, you can check out the place where we work. If you want to really learn how dynamic reactive forms work, you can come work with us. We are still hiring. If you just go to milestechnologies.com/careers, you can see all the available positions and different roles we're hiring for. So yeah, that's it. Thanks everybody for listening.
Yeah, thank you so much.
See ya.